Okay. 7 feet.
Tape measure in hand, I get the dimensions of my room.
101.
Perfect. Just big enough to fit a full-size mattress. And be able to close the door. Last episode, I completed the first week of my internship at the tech company and finally found an apartment. But night one, my air mattress deflated on me, so I spent the first week on my roommate's tiny couch. I've had enough couches for 1 year, and it's finally the weekend, so today's the day I'm going to go and get myself a real mattress. I've never been to IKEA before, and if you remember from last episode, my roommate's story of her trip sounded pretty awful. So I'm up early to strategize. I do some online research. I'm trying to spend under $300. I look for the second cheapest. I feel like that's always a good strategy. I find a full-size foam one for $279, which fits my budget perfectly. But then I see the delivery is an extra $60 and puts me way over. Damn it! And then I see something. The foam mattresses, they come rolled up. I check the dimensions of the mattress roll up. Height, almost 5 feet. Diameter, 16 inches. Weight, 40 pounds. I can totally carry 40 pounds. Perfect. No delivery needed. I'll carry the mattress home myself. I set off for the G train. Clipped around my waist is my teal fanny pack that I wear when I'm biking. I'm gonna need to keep my hands free for the journey back. You're listening to The Intern. It's a show about me, Allison Berenger, trying to make my way in New York City. If you're new to the show, go back to episode 1 and listen in order. I promise, it'll be more fun. I get off the subway and decide to walk the rest of the way instead of taking the bus. It's beautiful out. I'm feeling good, feeling independent. I arrive at IKEA just as it opens. I climb a still sleeping escalator to the showroom.
How come this one doesn't move?
I grab a map and set off. I weave through the sections, wishing each and every display room was mine. And I start writing down numbers for all kinds of furniture. Furniture I can neither afford nor fit into my room.
902.9196.12.
The bright lights and clean lines are dizzying. The longer I dilly-dally, the more crowded it gets. Finally, I get to the mattress displays. My $279 foam mattress. There it is. I lay down on the bed to test it out, but for some reason it makes me feel dumb. Maybe because I have no one to laugh with about the silliness of laying down fully clothed in public on a bed. I quickly get up and write down the number. Just to be sure I'll be able to get this thing home, I ask an IKEA guy how much it weighs. 40 pounds, he says. And then he tells me about their delivery service. No, I've got it. Oh, well, there's taxis outside, he says. No, really, I got it. I'm gonna take the bus and then the subway. It's gonna feel like a ton, he says. I can hear the condescension in his voice and I start to get indignant. I've got it, I insist. But as I leave the mattress section, I start doubting myself too.
Oh man, this is getting to be a lot. Everyone's here with families or with their spouses. And
families, parents, spouses, girlfriends, boyfriends, kids, friends. And me? I'm alone, with a 40-pound Tootsie Roll waiting for me downstairs in the warehouse. My throat starts to close up a little bit. Like any emotion, self-doubt in one part of your life has a way of bleeding into the next, and suddenly I'm questioning all my decisions. This tech internship podcast thing, moving out of my last apartment, moving to New York, leaving teaching, buying a cheap mattress, coming here myself. But I know I'm close. I power walk past the final rooms down to the warehouse.
Aisle 28, bin 29. Holy crap.
It's on the second shelf, so I have to stand on my tiptoes to reach it. Luckily, there's two handles around the middle. I bend my knees into my best squat position. Stomach in, butt out, back flat, and lift. No problem. I got this. Almost there.
And two chocolates, please.
How could I resist? a whole bar for 99 cents. I shove the chocolate into the pouch of my fanny pack and waddle as quick as I can out to catch the IKEA shuttle. The bus is pretty empty, so I take up two seats and rest the mattress on the floor and enjoy a moment of pride at my ingenuity. I eat some chocolate. I carry it off the bus. This isn't so bad. And then I remember the several flights of stairs I need to ascend to make it to the train platform. I try not to let it show on my face how much I'm struggling up the stairs. The subway car is packed. I'm doing my best to keep the mattress from bumping into people, but every time I need to adjust my grip, I feel like everyone is staring at me. I think about that 60 bucks. Why did I not just pay those 60 bucks and have it delivered? Or even paid the like 30 bucks and taken a cab? Off the train, up the stairs to the street, and still, 10 blocks to my apartment. Those 40 pounds have indeed become a ton. I've devised three different grips, and I alternate every block or so. First, the deadlift waddle. Then, I do the wrap my arms around it and carry it like a large, misbehaving child. Then, I do the throw it over my shoulder, boombox style. People walk past me with looks of confusion and pity. One guy suggests that I take a break. By the final blocks, I'm stopping every couple yards to change grips. Finally, up the front steps, up to the third floor. Avery's there to help me unpack. We lay the mattress on the floor. It's funny, I've told this story to friends and they're like, Allison, why didn't you just call me? I would have totally come with you. But at the time, it just seemed so clear to me that this was something to do alone. Being alone can be lonely, but it's also liberating. I sleep well that night. My morning rides to work are becoming more enjoyable. There's less of a burn on the final stretch of the Manhattan Bridge, and not as many people are passing me. I'm starting to learn the way, and I start to notice things, like the morning dance aerobics in a small park in Chinatown. The days at Baydorks pass in a similar fashion. The more I get my techie legs, the more I start to notice. And the more I start to realize that I'm out in an entirely new sea. I've been keeping a list in my notebook with all the acronyms that I don't know to look up later. So far, I have SEO, CPM, KPI, LTV, UI, UX, and API. API, I hear this last one all the time. Here's another thing I started to notice. People here love Twitter. I'm more of an Instagrammer and occasional Facebooker, so I don't quite get it. The other day, I heard someone at the office say, "Who uses Facebook and Instagram, but not Twitter?" Me. I made an account for myself back in college, but never really use it. I don't have the app on my phone or anything. But I feel like this is something I should definitely be figuring out now that I work in tech. And it's an obvious strategy for getting the word out about the podcast. So I try to start tweeting. But 140 characters is surprisingly laborious. I find myself drafting tweets in Google Docs, looking to see how other people tweet. Looks like hashtags aren't cool anymore. I'll open up the box, try to write a tweet, and then end up just deleting it entirely. Mostly, I just hit the Twitter button when I post pictures on Instagram. Then James, my boss, tells me that he wants me to start tweeting from the Betaworks company account. Great. It's 5 p.m. on Thursday, and it's happy hour. I've got a free drink in my hand, music is playing, people are sipping cocktails, laughing, chatting. But here's the thing. We're not in a bar, we're at the office, and the drinks are free all night.
Right now I am making watermelon limeade with tequila for our weekly happy hour.
When I was teaching in the Bronx, we had a code name for after-work happy hours. Book club. See you at book club later? Read a lot of books last night, didn't we, eh? I don't think the students ever suspected a thing. So yeah, openly drinking for free at work feels pretty weird, but definitely not weird enough to keep me from partaking.
Oh, this is really great.
Is it good? Does it need like more sugar?
Maybe more lime and tequila.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. You should try the pickleback shots next.
Oh, I've
Apparently every week someone from the office bartends for the big meeting. People quiet down when John, the CEO, stands up. Besides the company-sponsored drinking, Thursday night is a time when everyone gets together to give company updates and share what they're working on. It's also when new people get introduced. I'm a new person, but last week James didn't introduce me. Maybe he just forgot. Maybe he didn't want to introduce me until he was sure that he wanted to keep me around, that this podcast thing was going to work. I don't know.
Announcements, introductions, anybody?
New people?
New people?
But nothing. James just doesn't introduce me again. I suddenly feel really awkward. I don't get why he won't introduce me. It's further proof, though, that my spot here is far from official. I take some big gulps of my watermelon limeade. After intros, the demos start. I don't really understand a lot of what gets talked about, but it seems cool. I make mental notes of things to add to my terminology list. After the demos, I start chatting with two guys, Brian and Nathan.
Nathan and I actually met on Twitter.
That is true.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
We actually
met on Twitter? I've never met someone on Twitter or any other social media platform before meeting in real life. Okay, wait, that's a lie. I have used dating apps before. My mind starts to wander when suddenly the conversation turns to me.
Well, how do you use Twitter? The wrong way, clearly.
Brian gives me a smile and a high five to let me know he's kidding. I think.
What's your name?
It's Albie Tweeten.
Alright, so here we go. Hashtag first aid kit, hashtag summer stage, Instagram. Alright, so this is basically your Instagram.
I see what
you mean. You know why I don't post stuff from Instagram to Twitter? It's because the pictures don't come.
Why don't I?
Something about how when Facebook acquired Instagram, they pulled their Twitter integration. In other words, a link shows up instead of a picture. Something about it being a political move. Well, that was a little embarrassing. I talked to Brian later on about things. He's been at BetaWorks for a while, so he's kind of the resident wise old man, and a very honest one. He runs one of the companies here and also happens to be about my age.
You know, I think in talking to you sometimes, it feels like there are things that you clearly don't know. Like, I remember when I was talking with you and Margo and I started talking about lifetime values and cost of acquisition, you had this like glazed over look in your eye a little bit, which is totally cool. You know, Margo's been doing this for a while. I've been, you know, working in the field for like 6 or 7 years. I think reading stuff is great, and there's this really cool application. It's called Instapaper, which lets you save articles.
Yes, it's Instapaper that Brian runs, but I'll give it to him. It's a pretty cool app. So that's what I do. I start doing a lot of reading, and I talk to people.
So this is like all our portfolio companies.
I spend some time with Maya. She used to do a bunch of social media stuff for BetaWorks, but is now co-founder at a brand new company, Glitter. Maya talks a mile a minute. I find it seriously hard to keep up with her sometimes. She asks me how long I'm spending on Twitter.
On a scale of like never to always.
Six.
Okay.
So I think the simplest thing to do is just retweet things that seem interesting about BetaWorks. And just
this is kind of a problem because I have no idea what's interesting to BetaWorks.
Format-wise, you know, like don't start a tweet with an at and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. All the beta, okay.
I know that one, but okay.
Oh, but other ones.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so if you start it with an at, just put a period in front of it because that way everyone will see it. If you do a retweet.
Why a period?
That's just like the format that people use. Okay. So if you start with a tweet like this, mm-hmm. that's a reply. And so the only people that will see it are people who follow both of those people.
Okay, so I thought I knew about that period thing, but I definitely didn't know that one, which explains why my tweets the other day weren't showing up on my homepage. Here's my thing with Twitter. I know it's not that hard. I figured out how to do a bunch of stuff, and stuff much harder than Twitter. Heck, I carried a mattress on my back from IKEA. But there's this added hurdle with Twitter. It's the voice that's telling me that people don't actually give a shit about what I have to say. That I'm not witty enough or clever enough, and definitely not quick enough. There's always something going on, always something to miss out on. And in that way, it reminds me of living in New York. There's people from all over the world here, just like there's millions of people on Twitter, and always something going on. There's access to everyone and everything if you look for it. But when I think about it, that's not what we humans normally do. It's so easy to get into your own routine and bubble, to only talk to the people you know, and then suddenly you've built a wall around a very small, homogenous world. I realize that a lot of what I've been saving to my Instapaper recently are articles that get posted on Twitter and what my coworkers are posting on Slack, which, by the way, is another obsession at the office. And it's true that networks are enormously beneficial. I could go on and on about all the reasons why. And hey, it's how I got my job. It's just that it makes me think about who gets left out and, as a result, what perspectives are missing. Like the other day, I tweeted out a job posting for one of the companies. But who's seeing that job posting? It's people who are already in the network, who already know people who know people. And I can see why there's not much diversity here, or in tech more generally. There's a company here that also spends a lot of time thinking about connection and online networks. It's called Scale Model. It uses Twitter to identify communities and figure out what they're talking about. Here's Galad, the chief data scientist.
We have a lot of interesting data, and when big events happen, we tend to look at through our data and if we can find some important insight.
In the hours following the San Bernardino, California shooting in December, two very different narratives emerged, and Galad and his team were tracking all of it on Twitter. On one hand, people were sharing stats about the problems with gun control. On the other, people were mostly tweeting about the shooter's Muslim name.
It's the interesting thing is these narratives were very clearly separated.
How does Galad figure out that these conversations were separate? First, he took all the data they collected with Scale Model. Again, that's who's connected to whom, who the influential people are, and what they're talking about. In this case, it's any Twitter user talking about the shooting. Okay, so now here comes the cool data visualization part.
And we represent each user as a circle, right? A node in the graph.
Who follows who is represented with a line. When you throw all the interconnected dots onto a graph, the picture that emerges is not all that surprising. Imagine this. In one corner of the graph, you have the Second Amendment defenders and firearm enthusiasts densely clustered together. And in the other corner, you have the gun safety advocates. There's very few lines connecting the two groups.
Yeah, I think that what's striking is that there is no overlap between the networks. So literally, your position in the network defines the information that you will see, right? The thing is, the structure comes up constantly. We see this over and over.
When he says structure, he's talking about these two totally separate clusters of people with very few connections. Galad tells me about the two reasons why this structure comes up again and again. First, homophily, or love of the same. Basically, a fancy way of what I was saying before. The second, and here's the interesting one, I think, is the way that platforms like Twitter decide who to recommend that you follow. It's a method called collaborative filtering, and it's all based on who you already follow. It's the same thing that Amazon uses to recommend a sleeping bag and hiking boots after you buy a tent. From a social network perspective, it's basically just reinforcing our human desire for sameness.
The thing is, and the thing everyone's trying to figure out is, so what is the effect of social media, right? It feels like everything is so much more polarized than it was, but is that true? Like, is it just more visible? So we have this tendency with technology to blame the technology and not people, right? Oh, it's the tech, right? It's Facebook's fault. But is it?
Looking at the data, it's clear why the conversation around guns is at a stalemate. People just aren't talking to each other. Galad says that of all the issues they look at, the gun debate is one of the most polarized. So who do we blame for the polarization? Humans or the internet? Maybe some of both, but for sure, humans built technology. And we built it in our own image. Going back to what I was thinking about before, if we want diversity in different perspectives, it's something we're going to have to seek out. It's not going to come to us. Want to go to a thing with me? Margo asks me on a random Wednesday afternoon. I'm so tired of staring at my computer all day, trying to figure out Twitter and make connections with people over the internet. Sure, why not? Our first stop is a listening party for Dave East, this hip-hop artist that I hadn't heard of before. we meet up with two of Marco's friends and soak in Dave East's latest album. After a while, we decide to head back to Brooklyn to go dancing. Down into the subway we go, and there's more music for us. A guy is sitting on the steps and has his guitar case open.
It is.
Okay, singer. Okay.
Okay. One more time. The train coming. The train coming.
Okay.
So, darling, darling, stay by me. Oh, stay by me. Yeah, baby. Darling, oh, stay by me. Yeah. Whenever you're in trouble, baby, stay by me.
I think back to what my friend Katie said in episode 1 about wanting to love New York, but it hating you back. But tonight, I feel like New York loves me. And right now, I love it too. Our new friends drop off early, so it's just me and Margo. It's a really beautiful thing, connection is. In New York, as on Twitter, there's an infinite potential for it. But only if you get outside of what you know. There's just no way Twitter could have recommended this experience for me. I feel like I'm making lots of new connections with this internship. My coworkers are becoming my friends, which makes me even more resolute in turning this internship into a stable job. And even though I still feel much more comfortable with the in-person stuff, or IRL as the techies call it, doing this Twitter thing seems to be a pretty good way to keep my job here. Alrighty, so here we go. Follow me on Twitter. My personal Twitter is AlbyTweetin. That's AlbyTweetin. I know. Or if you're like me and don't quite get the hype, follow me on Instagram or send me an email. All the info's on the website, theintern.fm. I'd love to connect with you in whatever way you'd like. And if you're enjoying The Intern, rate it on iTunes and write a review. This will help other people find it. Yeah, networks. Here's what's coming up next episode. In the time since the recording and production of this episode, two of the voices you heard are no longer at their jobs. You'll hear more about that and how I got caught up in all of it. Until then, here's my boss, James, reminding me of the realities of the startup world.
It is a big experiment. I mean, BetaWorks is an experiment. We're a startup. Like, at any point, we could be like, well, we're going to do something different. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. And that's, you'll find that. It's like, if the podcast goes well, then like suddenly you're a star and you're doing podcasts forever. If it doesn't go well, like we'll do something else.
This episode was produced by me, Allison Behringer. Caitlin Prest was my editorial advisor. For the music, thank you to Dharma Burner and Array Access and Upright T-Rex, also known as Ross and Cody from Dots. Special shout out, as always, to my friends and coworkers for all your brain power. Thank you. And if Galad got the nerd in you excited, his team has done all kinds of data visualizations that you should definitely check out. Links are in the show notes. I'm Allison Behringer, and you're listening to The Intern.